darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media
and the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors, even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio. I am your host, Abraham Hamilton III. What a 96 hours. We are going to get into it. As promised, today will consist almost entirely, and I tell you why that is the case, pretty much entirely of discussing my post-presidential debate analysis, as well as analysis of the prospective events concerning presidential politics, as well as the current state of our nation in light of those events. Then, Lord willing, tomorrow we will go in depth on the Supreme Court opinions. When you go from Thursday evening with the debate debacle, which I will tell you now, I believe will go down in American history as one of, if not the most consequential debates in our nation's history, particularly as it pertains to turning the tide of national sentiment. I'm going to explain that as we go throughout the show. Then you get to Friday, where you have the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in separate opinions, first and foremost, that the Biden Department of Justice misapplied federal law and abused federal law to prosecute January 6th defendants. Then you have the U.S. Supreme Court ruling that Chevron deference, which the Supreme Court adopted in 1984, which simply says that if a statute is perceived as one perceived by one of the alphabet federal agencies, you know, Health and Human Services, Environmental Protection Agency, you know, Department of Education, yada, 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 you go down the line. If the agency perceives the law passed by Congress via statute is ambiguous, then the agency can dictate what the law says. And then the courts have to defer to the agency interpretation. That law, that Supreme Court precedent, ladies and gentlemen, is the reason why the administrative state has expanded to the place where it is now. Then you come to today and the U.S. Supreme Court rules in the immunity case that President Trump has absolute immunity. Well, let me say it more specifically. All presidents have absolute immunity for official acts undertaken during the presidency. The president is not above the law. Unofficial acts do not enjoy absolute immunity. But then sent the case back down to the federal district court to make a determination as to what may or may not have been deemed as official acts, non-official acts. What a 96 hours. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. But before we get to that, there's something very important, especially as we turn to the Word of God today. At this moment, many of you, if not most of you, are making your transitions from your part-time jobs where you generate an income to your full-time jobs where you cultivate an outcome. And as you do so, I want to remind you to do so with intentionality, understanding that what goes on in your house is far more important than what goes on in the White House. Outcome cultivation is vitally, vitally important. We have all kinds of things transpiring. I just described things that are happening on the national scene, on the national scale. And as I mentioned, today we're going to talk about the debate and the fallout from that. Tomorrow, Lord willing, we'll talk about Supreme Court cases. We'll go case by case as much as we can, and some of that will likely carry over into Wednesday. But it's important that we do this because I want you to understand. Y'all know my goal. Well, one of the things I try to do through this program is to translate legalese into common everyday speech so that everybody who tunes into this program, you know exactly what's happening. But none of that is promulgated and employed for the purposes of you taking your eye off the ball, taking your eye off of outcome cultivation right where you are. So as you're making your transition, do so with intentionality. And we, the corner contingent, Mr. Bobby Rosa, is right across from me as usual. And the producer extraordinaire, real J Mac, is in the screening room with his fresh lining, fresh for a Monday. I'm telling y'all, that boy fresh like a new pair, new baby diaper with powder in it. That boy is baby powder fresh over there. But we're ready to rock and roll with today's edition of the program. To the Word of God we go. Proverbs chapter 14. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 34, one verse. I want to share this verse with you because I want to make sure everyone who tunes into this program understands what makes a nation great from God's standpoint. All right, to the Word of God we go. Proverbs 14, verse 34. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a disgrace to any people. I'll say it again. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a disgrace to any people. That applies to any people at any point in history. That applies to any people demographically. That applies to any nation over the course of human history. I know we have people, and it's a catchy phrase, and kudos to President Trump for adopting the phrase, make America great again, which he really repeated from Ronald Reagan in the 80s. You can do your research, you'll find that that is true. All right, but it's a good slogan. But we should seek to make America great according to God's standpoint, not mine, not yours, not Mr. Trump, not the NASDAQ, not the Dow Jones Industrial. Righteousness exalts a nation. That is righteousness in the people of the nation. That is righteousness in the leaders of a nation. That is righteousness in the policies of a nation. That is righteousness in how neighbors treat one another. That is righteousness in the people's hungering and thirsting for their nation. That is righteousness through and through. The reason why I am saying this is because we are human beings. God has made us as human beings to be a social and relational people. As a result of being social and relational people, this is something that God hardwired us to be. All right? As a result of that, we have the tendency to allow the frequency of exposure, the frequency of experiences to redefine for us what our desires are. I want to be sure that we take the time today to set our course appropriately. We, especially if you are listening to me and you are a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ, I want to encourage you to set your course for what you desire for yourself, what you desire for your families, and what you desire for our nation to line up to what God desires. To line up with what God desires. It doesn't mean there are not things en route to what God desires that are good for us. For example, as a husband and a father and a provider for my family, yes, I would like to have a better economy than we have now. But I would like to have a better economy en route to our nation having a course correction in the way of righteousness. You understand what I'm saying? As an American who loves our country, I want to have, for example, a competent and functional Congress. But that is in pursuit of a higher objective that I desire for myself and for our nation. No, I'm not looking for a theocracy. What I am looking for is for a people who hunger and thirst after righteousness. You see the difference there? My desire is for the desires of the people who comprise our constitutional republic with democratic features to reflect a desire for righteousness. That includes loving our neighbors. But loving our neighbors does not mean we pacify and cosign all manner of wickedness. My concern is because of the frequency of experience that we have in our nation, And, you know, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said this during his time campaigning for the presidency, has repeated it in his gubernatorial ranks. Many have said it, that we are in a stage where our nation is in decline. All right. I agree with that to a degree. But I want to make sure that we understand what is the corpus. What is the thrust of that decline? The thrust of that decline is that by and large, we have a wicked populace. By and large, a wicked populace will not endure righteous leadership. This is why we had wisdom from the founders of our nation, like John Adams, who said that our constitutional republic is only sufficient for the governing of a holy, W-H-O-L-L-Y, religious and moral people. It is entirely inadequate for the governance of any other. What is John Adams driving at? Because he knows Jeremiah 17:9. Jeremiah 17:9 says the heart is desperately wicked. Who could know it? So if you have a people with hearts that are desperately wicked, and those people have the prerogative of dictating the course of action for a nation, guess what direction a wicked people will dictate the course of a nation follow? You see? The reason why I'm saying this, because we have some people whose desires really are just to go back to a time when we had a better economy. Some people whose desires are, we just need to close the border. But they have no overarching objective. The guy said, I agree with closing the border. I agree for a better economy, but that is a feature of something broader and bigger. That is not the goal in and of itself. And I know this is where invariably there's a rub that comes between what's known historically as conservative political leanings versus a Christ-centered and a Christ-based engagement in the society around me. I'll just remind everybody, I'll never forget, I historically didn't know that I was conservative politically. The term conservative was introduced to me as an attempt to insult me, and I didn't even know what it meant at the time. Dude said to me, hey, you're just conservative. And I said, man, you call me what you want, but what I do know is that God has revealed himself to us in Scripture, and I'm endeavoring as best as I can to live according to what the Lord has revealed in Scripture. That's my commitment, man. A lot of what we have enjoyed in this country has been the result of people who had a similar commitment. Not because they were perfect, of course not. But our founders, understanding their own imperfection, even put in the preamble of our Constitution in order to form an increasingly bettering union, to which they describe it as a more perfect union, expecting each generation of Americans to continue in that same trajectory. But what we're witnessing right now, and what we're experiencing in our culture right now, is a tug of war. Because you have some who would tell you, and they have views that are completely opposite of my own. They have views that completely go against the Scripture. But they would tell you they're trying to make America better. Which is why I say to people all the time, for those who object to morality being in law, I say, you don't object to morality being in law. You just object to whose morality it is. Because all laws is based on a fundamental determination of what is right versus what is wrong. That's what it is. So miss me with the, you can't have morality or morality in law. Why is stealing wrong? Why should stealing be criminalized? I mean, come on, man. Let's just be serious. Because theft is wrong and sinful, I decry theft, whether it comes from a neighbor or from the government. It's still theft. It doesn't all of a sudden, magic, voila, become something different because the government is the one doing the stealing. It's still theft. My very simple point with all of this is to encourage us to have and to embrace at the core of who we are. Proverbs 14:34, righteousness exalts a nation. Righteousness makes a nation great. Sin is a reproach to any people. In order for our nation to be better, the people in our nation must be better. I am not talking about some detached notion of moralism. I am talking about regeneration by the Spirit of God. The more people in our nation that are saved, the better our nation will be. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you. We need to save them. That's why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies. And that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or $140 helps to rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just dial #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's 250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Shining light into the darkness. This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Abraham Hamilton III here. We are going to get right into it because this, I don't think, let me say this. I said this in the first segment. I believe this is most likely going to go down in American history as one of the most consequential debates in American political history. And the reason why, what I mean by consequential, I'm talking about its influence on the perception of the body politic nationwide. I want to remind everybody that this debate that took place June 27th, earlier than any debate in American history, I would remind you the debate took place before any of the parties formally nominated their candidates. Both the Republican and Democrat conventions are yet to occur. This is a debate that the Biden team asked for. The Biden team set all of the rules. And this was the performance that was delivered. I want you to remember that. Simply put, this debate has completely moved the American people's attention away from substantive policy discussions between the candidates to truly a referendum as on whether or not Mr. Joseph Robinette Biden is competent to handle the duties of the presidency. That is the reality. The debate moved away from what is the Trump-Biden position on these policy issues and moved to how is Mr. Biden doing in life? And here's the significance. Many of you who have listened to and watched this program for any length of time, none of this is new to you because you've seen the videos and you've heard the clips and you've seen for yourself. There is no way this man is running the country. But the significance, and unfortunately, I don't know why this is the case. The rest of the American people don't necessarily watch this show and listen to this show. 80 million people tuned into this debate live. Now, probably half, if not two-thirds of the country have now formed opinions about the two candidates because of the debate, eclipsing 100 million people plus in the nation. I'm just, this is the reality of what transpired. Simply put, the American people have now witnessed what I and many others have been saying for the last several years. Just as I said when the Robert Hur examination came out, when he said, well, we really can't prosecute Mr. Biden because he is incompetent to stand trial, to which I have said, if the man is incompetent to stand trial, how is he competent to have his hand on the nuclear football? Many of you recall that. If you are, do not have the baseline competency, and I want everybody to understand, competency is not talking about the ability to do upper-level mathematics. Competency is a legal term of art that means a fundamental determination of right versus wrong. That's what legal competency is. All right? We have cases. Many of you are familiar with these, the idea of this. But I have personally had cases when a defendant has committed murder. The defendant has been ordered to a psychiatric evaluation. The mental health professionals have deemed them incompetent to stand trial, which means that they would go and receive medical treatment if and until they regain competency. Legal competency means that they have the wherewithal to ascertain right versus wrong and have the ability to assist in their own defense. And if they're incapable of that, they're not allowed back onto the streets. They are sent to custodial mental health treatment until they regain competency, if they do. And for years leading up to the week prior to the debate, we were told over and over and over, it is a conservative conspiracy that is saying Mr. Biden can't do the job. All of these videos of him falling up the stairs and falling off of his bike and shuffling his feet and talking to the air and not knowing where to stand, and all that's deep fakes. That's what Karine Jean-Pierre said, the Frenchman. Ha ha ha. Deep fakes. And cheap fakes is what she said. Joe Scarborough said a month ago, this is the best Biden has ever been. That's what he said. And now the American people saw it for themselves. Let's get right to it. Let's get right to it. I want you guys to understand what I'm about to play for you happened within the first, before they went to break in the debate. The first moments of the debate, right near the beginning of the debate. The question placed on the table by the moderators had to do with the national debt and deficits. This was Mr. Biden's response. Clip number one. Go.
Making sure that we continue to strengthen our healthcare system, making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do with dealing with everything we have to do with, look, if we finally beat Medicare.
Thank you, President Biden. President Trump.
What? That was his response to a question about the debt? And of course, everybody witnessed how Jake Tapper came in and tried to save Mr. Biden from his own stumbling. We beat Medicare? We beat Medicare. Now, I know not everybody in America has experienced a loved one losing their mental capacity, facing things like dementia and Alzheimer's. But those of you who have, you know exactly what you witnessed just now. You know exactly what you witnessed just now. This happened throughout the debate. Throughout the debate, Mr. Biden was asked a question. They had 2 minutes to respond. He would use like 20 seconds. And the moderators would say, thank you, Mr. Biden. You have 58 seconds remaining. You have 22 seconds remaining. This happened over and over and over again. The debate had no studio audience. The moderators were positioned to the right of Mr. Biden, yet he is found gazing off to the left throughout the debate. Mr. Biden went on through the debate at one point saying that Border Patrol endorsed him. I'll let you see this clip. Clip number two. Go.
We significantly increased the number of asylum officers. Significantly. By the way, the Border Patrol endorsed me, endorsed my position. In addition to that, we found ourselves in a situation where when he was president, he was taking separate.
While the debate is going on, the Border Patrol took to social media, posted on every outlet possible. To be clear, we have never and never will endorse Biden. During the debate. During the debate. Guys, the debate was frankly brutal. Brutal for Mr. Biden because much of the American people were, one, not paying close attention and you know, everyday Americans are not tuning into political news day in, day out, day in, day out, day in, day out, day in, day out. They assume, many of them assume he's the president. I mean, he must be doing okay. And then they watch this debate and they're like, what? What? Another question. Mr. Biden goes on another screed. Mr. Trump says, I don't know what this guy just said, and I don't think he knows what he said either. It's clip number three. And this is in regard to the immigration crisis. Clip number three, go.
Move until we get the total ban on the total initiative relative to what we're going to do with more Border Patrol and more asylum officers.
President Trump?
I really don't know what he said at the end of that sentence. I don't think he knows what he said either. Look.
That sentiment, and you had to be honest, that's kind of funny. That sentiment is now the sentiment shared by the overwhelming majority of the American people. I don't know what he just said, and frankly, I don't think he knows what he said either. Immediately following the debate, the Trump team had an ad ready to go with some of the greatest hits from the debate. It's clip number four. Go.
Folks, how are you? Making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do with dealing with everything we have to do with, look, if we finally beat Medicare, we're finally providing housing for Black Americans, the impact of on the choice, the idea that they're going to, I've been proposing that everybody, they pay, the millionaires pay 1%. So no one after, I've not raised the cost of Social Security for anybody. Kareem, I got my handicap, which when I was vice president, down to a 6. And wants to get away with, get rid of the ability of Medicare for us to be able to negotiate drug prices with the big pharma companies. What I'm going to do is fix the tax system. For example, we have 1,000 trillionaires in America. I mean, billionaires in America. No one was hurt. No one Israeli was accidentally killed, and it just stopped. And I'm going to continue to move until we get the total ban on the total initiative relative to what we're going to do with more Border Patrol and more asylum officers.
Now, a lot of people were focused on this and the debate and the November election. But can I tell you where my mind immediately went? And again, a lot of you are watching this and listening to this program right now. You know, this is nothing new. Mr. Biden has been like this for well over a year at a minimum. But many of the American people had no clue. Had no clue. My immediate question. Was to his functions and meetings day by day. And you know the debate is going bad because 50 minutes into the debate, the Biden team releases news for the first time that, oh, Mr. Biden has a cold. He had a cold. Nobody knew anything about a cold before the debate started, which, you know, they lie, folks. I hate to say it, but this is what they do. This man is in meetings day by day in the White House. This man is making decisions concerning. Then you have all kind of stories coming out of political and other places and saying, hey, by the way, Mr. Biden is only engaged from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Again, those of you who are listening to me and you had parents who struggled with dementia and or mental deterioration, you know what that's called. It's called sundowning. The longer the day goes on, the more difficult they become because of the mental debilitation. But my mind immediately went to the fact that now the American people know that Mr. Biden's handlers have been lying to the American people. And the media screed thereafter was overwhelming. Because Democrat supporter network after Democrat supporter network after Democrat supporter network began to say out loud, "Ooh, we need Mr. Biden to step down." But the thing that was amazing to me is that you guys knew he was like this. But you want to act like you're shocked. You want to act like, "Oh, I didn't realize it was this bad." Yes, you did, but you've been lying to the American people. And Scott Jennings on CNN actually said it. Clip number 5. Go.
"I'm worried about the president. We should pray for the president. I think his advisors, I think the White House, and I think his family have a lot of explaining to do to their party and to the American people. This night, this one night, was caused by and asked for by the Biden team. They wanted this night. And this is what we got. We have been told for weeks by Democrats who say, oh, in private meetings, I've seen Joe Biden do cartwheels and handstands while doing trigonometry while solving all the nation's problems. We now know that every single person who said that has been lying to the American people."
Guys, that is the truth. That is the truth. Which presents questions for the American people beyond the election. This reveals that we have been living in a nation with a shadow presidency. I told you, we've never had in American history a former president who moves less than 5 miles from the White House. And then we have convenient lack of curiosity as to what he's doing down there. This shows, well, let me just ask it this way. Do you think Mr. Biden is weighing in on policy matters in the White House after witnessing this debate? Do you think Mr. Biden is intimately involved in strategic decisions concerning America's military involvements in different places? Do you think Mr. Biden is chairing the conversations about the economic fallout and things going on with the Federal Reserve and record high inflation? Do you believe that he has the mental capacity to weigh in a cogent and substantive manner? Or do you think someone else is doing all of this? And if someone else is doing all of this, what say you about the United States Constitution that says that our elected officials are supposed to be those who are put in office by the American people? This reveals the prevalence of a shadow operation. And this is not remotely conspiratorial, because I'll say again, if the man is not competent to stand trial, a fundamental baseline understanding of right versus wrong and the ability to assist in his defense, how can he manage the affairs of this largest and most powerful nation in the world? Not largest, but the most powerful nation in the world.
The Hamilton Quarter podcast and 1 minute commentaries are available at AFR.net. Back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Abraham Hamilton III here. I'm going to run out of time before I run out of show. I want you to see this. And I'll just tell you very plainly, if people are asking who is the one that is continuing to press Mr. Biden to do this, I'll just tell you plainly, it's Dr. Jill Biden. You know, conveniently, you can go ahead and put the picture on the screen, Jeff. Vogue just released the cover to their magazine for July, and guess who's on the cover of the magazine? There she is, Dr. Jill Biden. If you look to the bottom right-hand corner, what is the caption there? "We will decide our future." Isn't it interesting that just over the weekend, and now you're getting all of this reporting all of a sudden that the Biden family has coalesced at Camp David, and it is the family, they're encouraging Joe not to drop out. You can overcome this, Joe. The reporting is indicating that Hunter is doing a lot of talking and Jill Biden is doing a lot of talking. Unsurprisingly, after the debate in Atlanta, Jill welcomed her husband with great celebration. And look at this robust, vigorous standard of excellence she set for herself and her husband. Clip number 6. Go.
Four more years. I can't thank you all enough for staying and for being here and for all your support. Yes. Joe, you did such a great job. You answered every question. You knew all the facts.
You answered every question. Guys, that's how I talk to my five-year-old. You answered every question.
Cole, you stupid.
It ain't stupid. It's evil. It's evil. She literally saying, good boy. Joe, what a good, Joe like a treat? Would you like a treat? Would you like a treat? Joe, good job. You earned your candy, big boy. That's a big boy. You went to the potty all by yourself. Guys, this is literally what she's saying. You answered all the questions? And in that brief moment, you get an indication of who's pushing this. Predictably, oh, man, I got to hurry up. Post-debate, Democrats, particularly in media, went berserk. I'll give you this screed from Cenk Uygur and the Young Turks. Clip number 7. Go.
And the whole time the split screen is killing Biden.
Yep.
Because he's got his mouth open, he looks confused, doesn't know where he is. He's lost his train of thought at least twice in like disastrous shape. Those are gonna be played a billion times in viral video after viral video. This is an epic disaster. I see people online saying, well, okay, that answer wasn't so bad. No, it doesn't. Any particular answer doesn't matter at all. This thing is over. He looks like he's barely surviving. I don't mean the debate, I mean life. And so there's no person that has a single brain cell left in their head who thinks that Joe Biden is the best candidate to take on Donald Trump. You would have to be even crazier than Donald Trump to think that. This thing is over. I'll guarantee you this. I would bet any, show me a Democratic politician and I will bet them any amount of money that Joe Biden's going to lose this election if he's the candidate. It's a guaranteed loss. You're telling me this is the most important election of our lifetimes? You're telling me that democracy's on the line and you're going to put on a guy who can't even talk, who can't even sit there and look normal? This thing's a bloodbath. He's going to get annihilated. That is, okay, now the Democrats have to decide. Are they happy to lose? Are they willing to lose? Because this is a guaranteed loss.
This is so much worse than my worst nightmares of what it could be like in every way. The visual stuff is obvious. The staring off, the looking down, it looks terrible. His voice is so utterly weak and feeble. And honestly, like that immediately hits you when you see him. But what he says and what he doesn't say on the most important core issues of the election are even worse. Trump won on abortion in the debate. Trump comes out of the January 6th stuff looking fine. He comes out of the criminal conviction stuff looking fine. Joe Biden looks worse on democracy after that. He looks worse on criminality after that.
And I'll give you this, and I have more I could say about that, but these are people that would most eagerly be in the Biden camp. When you lose Joy Reid, clip number 8, Joy Reid reveals that her Democrat friends are panicked following the debate. Clip number 8, go.
And a slight cold as well. So I understand not feeling well. And, you know, obviously Joe Biden comes in with certain deficits. He has a stutter. You know, it is more difficult for him to communicate for that reason. So there's a lot to mitigate the way that he speaks. And you can understand it. And we've observed him for a long time. That said, I, too, was on the phone throughout much of the debate with Obama world people, with Democrats, with people who are political operatives, with campaign operatives. My phone really never stopped buzzing throughout. And the universal reaction was somewhere approaching panic. Hmm. The people who were texting with me were very concerned about President Biden seeming extremely feeble, seeming extremely weak. And you know, I'll just reiterate what I said earlier. President Biden had one job tonight, and it was one primary job. And yes, it was to litigate Donald Trump's, you know, criminality and all of those things. But he had to settle his own party. Mm-hmm. He needed to settle Democrats. Democrats, you know, they always talk about Democrats are bedwetters and Democrats are always panicking. Yes, Democrats are always panicking. They're always scared, right? They're always thinking they're going to lose. Like, Democrats are very pessimistic. This is just
neurotic.
Who they are. They're neurotic. But Joe Biden's job was to reassure them tonight. His job was to calm his party, to make them feel that, yes, I can do this. I have four more years in me. I have the ability and the stamina and the strength to do four more years. He did not do that. He did the opposite of that. He made them more panicked.
He made them more panicked. Then here's this last clip for today from Joy Reid. Clip number 9. Go.
People who were texting me were even more panicked. They actually expected it to be better than it was. And now they're in I won't say a full-fledged panic, but it's getting there.
And are people that you're talking to who are expressing these concerns, are these people who are involved in Democratic politics or
yes.
are these liberals watching TV?
This is not liberals watching TV. These are campaign people. Mm. These are people who are either Democratic operatives. These are people who are former, you know, sort of Obama World Administration people. These are people who are in the business.
Okay.
So the civilians are also panicking. They're also texting me, but I was trying to kind of ignore the civilians and really talk to the campaign folks. People are... they're worried, and there is, you know, it's not a full drumbeat yet, but there is talk of, look, here's the thing. I know a lot of politicians. I just happen to know a lot of them yeah. at a lot of levels. They all believe that they have a unique ability to run the race that they passionately want to run. And I know for a fact that Joe Biden passionately believes that he is the only person who can beat Donald Trump. And he has evidence of it because he did it before.
Right.
He knows that he has certain demographic strengths that Donald Trump cannot counter. He is the real working class white guy that's actually Donald Trump's base. So he knows how to talk to them. He believes that he is the only person that can do it. The problem is after tonight, his party doesn't believe that.
His party doesn't believe that. Now here's the thing. Oh, man, I'm running out of time. First of all, Joy Reid is lying. These people have known that this is who Joe Biden was. The reason why you see this about face publicly is because they realized many of the American people didn't know. Many of the American people didn't know. Now the American people are seeing, no, this is not a right-wing conservative caricature. This is who he is. This is the reality. And so now these same folks like her, who just weeks ago was saying, he's ready, he's fit, he's ready to rumble, now they're covering. Then, of course, I'll leave aside, she's a neutral and unbiased journalist, so she's spending all the time on the phone with all these Democrat politicians and these Democrat party operatives. That's what she's on the phone with. Leaving that aside. This now presents to the American people the first time, and many of you may recall that I've been saying for a very long time that Mr. Biden wasn't going to make it to the campaign, to the election in November. Many of you will recall that. I have said that for quite some time. And I'm going to have to carry some of that analysis most likely over to tomorrow. But this presents an opportunity for the first time in this election cycle. And listen, I am no Republican. I am no campaign advisor, but I have been known to offer free advice, and I will offer some right now. The reality is that there are some financial strictures that will limit the capacity. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it will limit the capacity to use campaign money that Mr. Robinette has for any other candidate. The Republicans in Congress, House Speaker Mike Johnson and Chip Roy, Congressman Chip Roy, has already begun discussing this. They should force the Democrats under oath to explain how, when, where, and why they have been lying to the American people about Mr. Biden. Hakeem Jeffries goes to the White House every other week. All of these Nancy Pelosi, all these people, they talk to Joe Biden all the time. They've known what this man is. They've known he's unfit to man the office. They should invoke the 25th Amendment immediately, and I'll tell you why. It gives them the opportunity to control what happens thereafter. According to the 25th Amendment, Joe Biden being deemed unfit to continue in office would immediately do what? Make Kamala Harris ascend to the top of the Democrat ticket. You have the same Kamala Harris, and this is just merely talking political strategy, because the other questions that need to be asked, I would argue, in the course of this examination, they need to ask who has been making the decisions concerning national policy, who has been making the decision concerning international policy, who has been manning the nuclear football, who has their fingers on the button. And this is the difference. They should have done this before, but the reason why they can do it now is because the American people have witnessed this, and they don't have to do the additional explanation. Well, why are you asking all of these questions? The American people already know why these questions are being asked. They need to ask these questions as caretakers of the republic right now. We have Putin going on advancing in Russia right now. We have Hamas continuing with Israel right now. We have Taiwan having Chinese ships floating around them right now. We have all of these things happening now. Who is commander in chief now? This is what they need to ask. And if they assert the case using the 25th Amendment to get all of these people under oath in congressional hearings, regardless if they succeed with removing him from office or not, they force the Democrats to answer the question, who has been running our country? How many times have you been to Obama's mansion in Colorama? How many times have the cabinet members been conferring with Susan Rice? How many times have Ron Klain given you speech talking points? How many times, when, where, and has all this been happening? Then, should you advance this, you get to dictate that the one who now steps in at the top of the Democrat ticket is cackling Kamala Harris, the same one who can get 1% of the Democratic primary, the same one who much of the country just simply does not enjoy. You get word salad Kamala, and you get to force a Democrat's hand to say you guys thought so highly of her that you put her in position to be second in command in the event that the chief commanding officer was unable to operate. You said she should be given the controls. Now you tell her you don't want her to run. You force their hands, and for the first time in this entire electoral cycle, you get to control and dictate what transpires. For the longest, the Republicans have been playing defense. Trump case here, indictment here, felon, all of these things happening. January, all of these things happening. For the first time, you get Republicans in Congress need to unify now. The American people are owed an explanation for who is running our country. The man can't even answer a question about immigration. How can he tell us anything about international policy? They need to do it now, not tomorrow. Not now, it needs to happen. Because I'll tell you plainly, it's 200 some odd days before the next president will even take office. A lot of evil can happen between now and then. And not only did the American people witness Joe Biden on national television, guess who else witnessed it? All of America's enemies on the global stage. I know Republicans have Republican in the past. I'm just giving a little bit of advice. Now is the time to assert that. Press this into the American people's consciousness now. Because what you have the capacity to do is not only turn the tide in this election, but cause the entire nation to become distrusting of the Democrats as an entire party.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.